Hello, and welcome to another episode of What Makes You Click. I'm your host, Kelvin Bullock. And on today's episode, I've got a guest that I was very excited to chat with. He is an LA-based portrait photographer, and his unique style is truly something to behold. And throughout the process of this conversation, he even inspired me to do something that I haven't yet done until after this conversation, that is. And stick around for the end of the episode, and I'll tell you exactly what that is. So without further ado, let's take a listen to hear what makes Mr. Nick Rasmussen click. Nick, hey, I appreciate you for taking the time to chat with me today. I'm very excited to hop into learning about who you are and what makes you click. And before we do that, though, I start with how I first became aware of my guest. And for you, I actually just learned about you. Had to have been maybe a month ago, maybe might not have even been that long. But one of my favorite podcasts is Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard and Monica Padman. And I was listening to an episode and Monica was talking about how she had some photos taken. And she always talks about how she doesn't like pictures of herself, but she was raving.
She talked about it?
Yes. Yeah. So she was raving about who took her photos and then they threw your name out. And so I was like, wait, I got to stop.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm telling you, like, this is exactly how this happened. So I stopped listening, like before they even got into the episode, I stopped and paused and went to your Instagram. And well, first I went to hers because she said she posted it on her Instagram. So I went to hers, saw the images, and I'm like, yo, like, these are fire. Who took these? And then I went over to the Instagram and I'm like, yo, this guy has mad talent and I need to learn a little bit more. So I got a little deeper, went to your website and I started looking at it. I'm like, man, it looks like he's shooting film and it's this dreamlike kind of a vibe. And I'm like, this is exactly right up my alley. So of course I had to reach out and have you on the show. So again, thank you for hopping on.
Oh, appreciate it. Like, I mean, definitely first time being asked to like speak about my work like that, I guess. I think doing this stuff, you can kind of like, oh man, I don't think anybody knows what I'm doing over here. But then it's like, oh, okay, someone's asked me to do this thing. Like, be like, okay, somebody's at least sees you out there.
Yeah, yeah. You have definitely been seen. So, and that's, you know, the internet is a gift and a curse. But in this instance, it allowed me to connect with you. And that's a win. But something else that I like to do on the show is really learn about the origin stories of my guest. And I saw that you grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So can you tell me how your family even ended up there? Have they been in that area for generations or did they move there, you know, when you were a kid, or how did that work?
Yeah, I was definitely born there. I know that much. Now, I know we bounced to like Wisconsin for a couple of years, but then I think my parents really liked the schools in Ann Arbor. So I think that's what they told me. At least that's like what my understanding was. And they liked the schools in Ann Arbor. So we moved back. And yeah, they had lived in Michigan growing up. But they've also both lived in Florida and they kind of bounced around. But mainly Michigan, my whole life in there. And then I moved out to LA when I was like 22 or 23 in 2009. But yeah, so I'd spent all my formative years out there and kind of just took a long time to figure out what I was like interested in, I think.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, but what did your parents do? What kind of professions did they find themselves in Ann Arbor?
Well, they both were occupational therapists, which is kind of a really like vague, you can end up anywhere with that kind of background. But my dad was kind of an artist soul, and his dad, who had passed before I was born, was also like a really talented painter. I have some of his paintings up here that are just cool, vibey, portraity things. But he was a really it kind of became a hobby. And I think that was a little bit of a product of starting a family and just being like, well, I'm going to work at Ford. And so he was doing like workshops at Ford and which is all like apparently what you can do with the occupational therapy background. But he was always sketching and painting, and he dabbled with some photography. But it was kind of weird because I never really like feel like looking back. I always appreciated it, but never like connected it and shared it with him. Like it was kind of something he was doing. And I'd be like, all right, I'm going to go like in my room or skateboard in the garage or something. And then when I was about to move, he had a camera in the basement, just a 35 millimeter Nikon. And I was like, this camera looks cool. It's pretty heavy. Can I borrow this for this drive to California? And then I was like, oh, film photos come out really cool. That's fun. And I just kept like taking photos of friends and stuff. But that sort of kind of all, and then as I was doing that, be like, oh yeah, my dad was always doing this. I feel like I have some sort of innate skill that I was like touching in on.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny when I think about it, how as children, our parents are like these entities or these beings that are responsible for taking care of us. And then even when we get older, we don't really think about them as like, they were individuals before they had us. They were somebody with a personality, somebody with dreams and goals before they had us. But, you know, I don't think I even started considering that until probably in high school, honestly. That's just how selfish I was. It's kind of funny to look back now. And even when I think back about how creative my dad was when I was a child and how he would draw different things. And I remember one Halloween, we didn't have any Halloween decorations, and my sisters and I were like, Dad, we need some Halloween decorations. Halloween's like right around the corner. Why don't we ever put anything up? And so he drew like a skeleton, like a life-size skeleton sketch, and then like cut it out and kind of did the little, put the little joints in them so the arms could. And thinking back on it now, I'm like, damn, that's crazy that my dad was able to do that. And he's a cop by trade. Like he's a captain with the sheriff's department in Madison County, Alabama. Shout out to Madison County. But that, you know, he was always a cop, you know, our police officer in our mind. But to think of him as a creative is just kind of like a whole other thing. So, but anyway, to your point, yeah, it's kind of funny how we don't really connect those things until later on, you know?
Yeah. He had passed maybe about 3 years ago, and that'll like really hit me in waves now, where it's like, really like had a passion for it, and he still but like put it on hold and would just do it in his free time. And I think it's been really intense to like do stuff and then kind of see him in it. And that is like kind of a mind blowing thing where it's just like, what, like, I know, yeah, I couldn't do anything. Go be like, hey, what was that like? You, what were your dreams in your, with your art? And he never gave up until the end. That was like a huge part of his life. But also knowing that he had put it on hold to do family, and that his dad was also really talented at it, but then put it away to like try to do real estate. And it's like, kind of feel like there's this kind of line of artists who wanted to do it and just didn't have they just didn't want to roll the dice on it. Cause it is kind of like feels like an insane thing every day to like try to bank on it. So I'm kind of like trying to like, oh, I'm also going to like carry the flag for them. Even like hearing how your dad would kind of seem to have this artist spirit and stuff in him, but then, oh yeah, that like goes into you. And I'm sure you find yourself connecting to that through him.
Definitely, definitely. And did your mom have any creativity in her, any creative spirit or?
Well, I think Beth, not as much. She was kind of always into Pilates and some exercising, I think she's like creative, but just not in like a way that produces tangible things. But especially like in the last few years, she's really like, yeah, I mean, now she's trying to get into like psychic energy, and she's doing like ayahuasca, which is like totally not in character for her. Oh, like laying out and just bouncing around in an RV like around the country a little bit, and it's, oh, you're like definitely in flow. It's not like the same the way I do it or that my dad did it, but there's something I took something from her, but it wasn't the skills to let or like create little objects.
I like how you put it when you said it, not necessarily tangible, but she still has that creativity in her. I think that's also something that my wife and I kind of, she's always like, oh, you're more creative than I am. I'm like, well, no, you're creative, you just do things in a different way, and it's a different product that comes from it. And so do you have any siblings, any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I have a younger brother who lives in Chicago right now. He works in film, and he's working on like The Shy out there.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. And he, I think, has intentions to move out here as well. And definitely is like a very creative person in like a very different way. Like he's a much more thought out person. And I think I'm kind of like I think frenetic energy is the word for it, where it's just a little more like broad strokes.
Yeah. So when you were, you know, growing up in Ann Arbor, and you said this earlier that it's, you know, kind of taken you a while to be on the creative path that you're on. What did you find yourself creatively drawn to as a child or maybe in high school? What were some of the things that you found yourself really connecting with? Was there any writing or reading or drawing? Or
I feel like I've always kind of like been like a rotates kind of to like what I'm interested in. But I remember like in second grade being like, oh, I want to grow up and be a cartoonist. So I assume at that time I was drawing a lot. I don't fully remember what I was actually doing, but I remember being like, oh yeah, I want to be a cartoonist. And then like thinking that was like where I'd go, like making comic books or like putting cartoons up. I would do a little writing, but that was never really as much. But then like I was always making like videos, short, like my dad had like a VHS camera. And so I'd like invite friends over to be like, you want to make a martial arts movie in the backyard? Like, which nowadays would be just be like, these are kind of pulling a lot of this cultural appropriation. Like talking with like bad accents and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, but being just like loving martial arts movies. So I was like, oh yeah, like making a lot of like film. Like I would always go to teachers and be like, instead of like writing a paper, can I just make a movie instead? And they would be down for it because I think they could see that my attention needed to be on things that I actually wanted to do. I was really hard up reining my attention on things that I wasn't interested in, which maybe would be diagnosed as like ADHD or something. But and then I got into like skateboarding a little bit. So then I was making skate films, and that got me into like editing and using music and stuff and trying to like chop stuff up that way. It was weird because before I got into like taking pictures, I would just walk around downtown with like a video camera and basically take what should have just been a photo, but I'd like roll on like a fire hydrant. I would get some sort of, I think I was starting to realize that like visually I would find pleasure in like composition and stuff. It'd be like, oh, there's something to what I'm doing here, but I never did anything with any of my fire hydrant footage. But so just dabbling in that. And then I think painting and stuff just kind of fell off where I like, stopped doing that. But then was there anything else? Yeah, video. And then I got into video production, and that's what brought me into LA. Once when I was like, oh, this like the community college I'm going to has video production classes. I've been doing that already. I don't know why I'm in, like business classes, like I'm not doing well. And that was really kind of a life-saving thing where I was like, oh, I kind of found a direct. I was like, oh, I can get A's in these classes and then transfer to a school out here. And then, but then right when I got my like film degree, I was like, I'm going to be a photographer, I think. And then moved away from that and got into improv and was doing more filmmaking stuff. And then about 3.5 years ago, I was working at an estate sale company, taking photos of furniture and stuff and using studio lights for that. And I was like, oh, I should use these lights for like, take a photo of my roommate and see how that comes out. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I think after that, I was just like, this is it.
Isn't it funny how that happens where you when it clicks for you and then you're like, oh, wait a minute. This is something.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I see people out there like getting paid for this. And I was like, I think what I did was better than that. So I could at least make some supplementary money on this.
Yeah.
But then within a couple of months, I think I like left the estate sale place and was able to be like, I'm just doing this. I'm just going to try this.
Well, what I'm loving about this story thus far is I'm seeing a lot of similarities between some of the things that you were doing and some of the things that I found myself doing like years ago. Like you were talking about doing little videos with the VHS camcorder. And that was, I used to do that as well. I used to just carry, we had this big old, cause this was like the camcorder that we'd take on our family vacations or whatnot. And I would just take it and my sister and I would walk around the neighborhood and I'd be like, all right, now walk down the sidewalk and then go to the front door and open the door. And then I have to pause it. I'd be cutting it in camera cause it allowed me to pause. And then I'd go and get in behind the door and let her open it. And it would look like we had multiple cameras going.
Yeah,
it
was and you see like that cut, and you're like, yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. That looked like it really was a thing.
Yeah, like, yeah, and then. You talked about going to, you know, doing some training with UCB, which is the Upright Citizens Brigade. And that lets me know that, okay, you like the filmmaking aspect, but there was something also that drew you to improv and being up in front of people, because, you know, sometimes it's an interesting thing. Like, I know for me, I do like to perform, but I think I like being behind the camera a bit more than in front of it. So it's interesting to me that you had that knack or that draw to both of them. So what was it about improv that really stood out and resonated with you?
How I got into it in the first place was when I was going to that school in Michigan. I remember I could, like, for me to graduate when I wanted to, they were like, okay, well, you can take a class that you think the class I needed to take wasn't available. So they were like, you can take like some other class and maybe we'll just give you the credit for that. And I was like, oh, there's this improv class that seems kind of an easy A. I'm going to no brainer. I'll just do that. And then clicked into that. And I think ever since a kid, I've known that I have a unique sense of humor that I think works. And so that was fun. And it was like fun working with the people and I would get a good reaction. And I think I just knew that I was good at it. So I was like, that feels really good to do. I have like some sort of natural ability in it. So I'll just stick with that. And then learning about the Upright Citizens Brigade in Michigan, like buying the DVD and moving out here and being like, oh, that's where they did it. That's crazy. And it was a huge tool to meet people. So that was like moving out to LA and not knowing anybody is like all of a sudden I'm kind of around like people and I'm kind of like proving that I'm good at it. So people would respect that and be like, okay, yeah, you can hang. And then that became quickly my whole network of any net friends I had was just like people you meet through that. And that's why I think a lot of people out here get into it because it kind of comes with a built-in community. And about 6 years really threw myself into that. It was like running a show and trying to get on house teams at UCB and just being like blown away by the talent there and how cool everybody is. And that became, and just also when you start to do that a lot, you start to see how the skills you pick up in that can kind of translate to just about everything else. So that has been like, been very grateful for that experience. And like any networking I've done has been kind of based in that.
Yeah. I love the idea of UCB and they've definitely churned out like a ton of talent over the years. And, you know, for me, I'm just like a lover of all types of comedy, whether that be stand up or improv. I don't know. It's just something about laughter that really resonates with my soul, if you will. And when I saw that you know, working, doing that, but then also using that as a tool to, you know, network, as you said, and build community and also create like your own portfolio of work like that. And when I saw that, it made me think about a project that I've been kind of noodling around with in my mind that I haven't actually done yet, but I really love stand up. Anytime I'm in LA, as a matter of fact, if I don't take at least one trip to the Hollywood Improv or the Comedy Store on Sunset, then like my trip has been wasted. Like I always try to make it a point to go, and I'm in the DC area and there's a couple of comedy clubs here. And the thought that crossed my mind is, you know, I want to either kind of hang with a few of the comedians, like as they're like when they're there in town to do a show and kind of not only just document, but also kind of create some portraiture that is not necessarily like outwardly funny or goofy, but this just captures the juxtaposition of, you know, the darkness and the light of comedy. Because I feel like,
especially stand up, playing darkness.
yeah. So, cause you know, there is some of that comedy can come from a very dark place, but at the same time, it's like it brings light. And so I like that idea. And so I've been wanting to kind of play around with that and either do it with people who are in town or even find like some comedians who are on the road and travel with them. Like I got to figure out how to do that.
Feel like to think about how much joy they bring people, but like after probably having, I think it's just kind of a stereotype of stand-ups of like how kind of hard on themselves and everybody else they are. And it's a tough position to be in, but you are like giving so much somehow, like through all that pain, you're able to like just turn it into joy for others. Maybe at your own detriment, but like other people really get a kick out of it.
Kind of like the whipping boy, you know?
Yeah.
And so this is also interesting to me that you decided to pick up, and we're going to go back just a little bit, but you decided to pick up and move to LA. And what was that decision like to, you know, go from Ann Arbor to LA? Like, what was the deciding factor, and how did you overcome the challenges of people saying, oh, that's crazy, or your own thoughts of like, what am I doing? Like, why would I do this? Like, what am I doing? Like, why would I do this? Like, how did that decision come about, and how did you kind of face some of those demons, I guess, if you will?
I really was excited to leave Ann Arbor at a certain point, because I think I was just sick of I just remember being like sick of running into people from high school, like around town, being like, yeah, you know, like still here. Like, and I also kind of feel like I was really like not into who I was in high school. And I remember wanting to like, and I don't want to be reminded of that, get away from people who like knew me in high school in like in a way like that, and being like that. I just would be like, that's not who I am anymore. Like, which, you know, I take, you know, still unpacking and, you know, making amends with that.
Yeah.
And being like getting into video production and being like, knowing that, well, if I stay here, I guess I can make like car commercials, but that doesn't like, I know I'm connected to like the arts and wanting to maybe if video was like, you know, at the time it was like, oh, I want to make movies. I want to write films and direct films and maybe be in them. It wasn't really as much of I knew I never really wanted to get into acting, but it was just like, yeah, I think I'm done. I think I'm done here. I'm done being a townie.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to like anybody who would feel like staying, but I was like just ready for just the new chapter and making my own way and stuff. I think I was always like growing up was always like, I'm going to do my own way. And I think my parents have even told me about that, where I never was trying to do what was kind of being expected of me or told that should be expected of me. It was like, well, if you advise me to go left, I think I'm going to find a reason to go right. And like, I'm going to go to LA now.
Well, I like what you said in that. You said, okay, you know, you were tired of being reminded of who you were, and you're not that person anymore. And the beautiful thing about moving away to another place is that opportunity to reinvent yourself, because the people that you're going to be meeting, they're not going to know your past. They're not going to know your history. And, you know, that is a breath of fresh air in a way. And I've experienced that as well with being an Army brat and moving around from place to place. And there is definitely something to be said about being able to reinvent yourself and kind of escape those ghosts from your past.
Yeah. And it was really, I mean, it's just nice to move to like what felt like the world stage. It was like, oh, I think even when I haven't earned it, I felt confident in my voice, even when I didn't like know what it was yet. I just was, you know, just like, I got to get this out there. Even when looking back, I'm like, I had nothing to say back then. I didn't know I needed to listen to my voice at that point. But being like, oh, I'm excited to be here in LA. We're like, this is like where you go. And, you know, where like the world, you know, knows about LA. If it's going to pop off, like it might happen here. And so it was like, this just felt like the right place, kind of more so than if I was to go to New York or something.
And, you know, you keep saying something, or you keep saying that, like earlier, you said that you were still unpacking some things about your past. And then you just said something else that made me think that you are really doing a lot of inner work to listen to your voice now. And I find that as I have gotten older, that I too have become more aware of my voice and some of my thoughts, and asking questions like, okay, well, why am I feeling this way? Or why do I like this? Or why do I like that? What do you attribute this self-awareness to? What's kind of been the catalyst that has brought on these types of questions that you ask?
I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely like an overthinker and stuff. I think I kind of like go and process by myself a lot and do think about that. And I do like that, like the Artist Way morning pages and stuff. So it's always kind of like trying to pull the thoughts out. And
I'm sorry, what is that you say? That sounds like something I should probably look into.
There's this book, The Artist Way, which is kind of like, to some people it's kind of common. A lot of people, it's been around for a long time, but it's basically like there's 12 chapters and you're supposed to do one a month. And it's kind of like, what were you like? What did you like as a kid? What would you do now? Nobody told you no. And you're just answering all these questions.
Okay. Yeah. This sounds familiar. I feel like somebody else had recently told me about that. You don't recall the author. Either way, I'll Google it and I'll put it in my show notes.
But, the author is Julia Cameron.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to put another link in the show notes for anybody who's listening to check that out.
And I feel like maybe my dad, I feel like as a kid, my dad probably even tried to push it on me, but I was like, I don't like, you have too many self-help books. I do not care. Do not push books on me. And then of course, there's so many things that like come back that I'm like, dang, he was trying to push it on me for so long. And now I'm like getting into it myself. But the main thing about that is that you do morning pages, which is write three pages, just free thought first thing in the morning. And it's kind of just like a way to dump all your thoughts out. But I think that is kind of a lot of self-analysis. I think as a kid, like sort of, there's like a weird thing in me that I feel like I tie everything to this like experience in sixth grade when like all the friends that I had sort of like cut me off. And so to answer your question would be like, I think that put me on a long, maybe sometimes negative path of being like, what am I doing like wrong? Which I think the work now is to be like, okay, that stuff wasn't wrong. This just, you know, as a kid, you're like, oh, they're right. Like, what the heck did I do to deserve this? But so kind of managing my thoughts and feelings and being kind of like introspective like that was sort of just sort of baked in at that point.
Yeah.
Which I think came from a defense of, oh, I don't ever want to step out of and do something wrong. So I'm going to be really like a master of what is going on inside of me. I don't know. I value getting in really like deep with people and like trying to like, I think like small talk's tough for me to want to sit through. So I try to like enjoy, and especially like with working with a lot of people, I feel like I spend a lot of time like unloading my stuff on them too. And being like, this is what's going on with me, which is more exciting to me than I guess other stuff, talking about other stuff.
It's always crazy to me how the things that happen to us when we're younger and our brains are still forming, it's like they are imprinted on our brains like tattoos that will never go away, and they will shape our behaviors henceforth, you know. And it's so crazy, you know, to have an experience like that. Like you said, in your situation, you got cut off by some friends in the sixth grade, and you're like, wow, I don't ever want anything like this to happen again. Let me make sure I check myself before I wreck myself again, you know? So,
yeah. And I think I, for some reason, got into like psychoanalysis. So like reading some books on that would just be like, I was like, oh, well, the stuff that's going on in your mind is like insane. And I think artists who I really admire, like tap into that, and you're like, oh, I can see through their work that they're like touching on something deeper than the what's on the surface. And I think when you are able to do that with yourself, like now I can attribute it like that to other people. And because I think sort of the work that I like, if I was ideally doing it in a way that I like want to do it, to work with a subject who I'm like understanding like who they are on a deeper level and be like, oh, let's put that on in this square frame that we're working on. You know, people might not understand that that's what we were saying, but like, hopefully you do. And that can be just a great place to pull the ideas from.
And you mentioned that the artists that you like are able to, you know, convey those messages on a deeper level than just surface. And so can you speak to or mention some of the artists that you do find inspiration from, or that you have looked to in the past that have guided you in your own creative pursuits?
Yeah, I think probably like number one, just from a kind of a conceptual place, like I really like Tim Walker's work, which I think, you know, he's probably one of the more like successful of doing kind of just strange like concept mixed with a cool technique. It just feels so seamless and like just makes you be like, how did you think of that and do that? And it feels natural.
Yeah.
That like Annie Leibovitz, I feel like is a good one where she'll tap into what you know about somebody and present an image that kind of makes a statement about that without pulling from the aesthetic value kind of thing, like where it's still like a beautiful photo, but there's an idea like wrapped in there. And you're like, as an audience member, can kind of like put together what she's trying to say. And like Sarah Moon, I don't know if that like really speaks to, I don't know if I'm like, she's maybe lesser known, but like, just that's very like aesthetically pleasing to me and kind of feels like it comes from a dream place. And you're like, yeah, anybody who, yeah, where it's like feeling like a dream, like you said, I was glad you said stuff felt like dreamlike, because that's definitely like where I'm trying to come from. Feels like something you maybe thought of when you were sleeping, but now here it is in an image. I used to be really into dream analysis just in general, but I've kind of stopped being able to remember my dreams for some reason.
Hmm. You've just said quite a bit. And first, let me say that everything that you just described about the characteristics that you described about what you liked about all of those people's works, I find myself when I'm looking at your work trying to break it down myself. Like, okay, now this concept is interesting. And then the way he shot it and the colors and then the subject matter themselves. So I'm looking at it. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little envious. I'm like, damn, like I need, how can I start incorporating more elements that really tie into a story and really make the viewer sit back and think about what it is that's trying to be conveyed here. So I can definitely say from my own experience looking at your work that I feel what you have felt about your work, the way you felt about the people who've inspired you. So that's...
Oh, cool. Appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, to that end, I feel like when I started about 3.5 years ago or so being like, all right, this is going to be it. I feel like I spent a few years of it just being like, well, I like that. I'm going to try that. I know that person did it. I'm going to try that. And like kind of realizing that I could never pull off what they were doing, but like something else would happen and it'd be like, oh, that's cool. Great. Now I kind of understand how long exposures work a little more. Like it feels like I had trouble finding like a vision, like a unique or consistent visual for a long time. But I feel like maybe in the last year, it's sort of the feedback I've gotten is people like, oh yeah, you're like found it, you know, it's in a lane now, but still like elements of all that stuff that I kind of experimented with. But then I remember, I think what also brought me to that was like, I think at first when I was taking pictures, it'd be like, oh yeah, like let's like go with a girl into a field at sunset and there'd be these pretty photos like, and there's nice backlighting. But then I realized like, man, I never need to like look at this photo again because like it's pretty, but I'm not getting any information about it. And I think the people I could go back to, I was like, whoa, like you, some of these images, yeah, you can go back to it. I just love looking at this picture all day because like as there's something here and I don't know what it is, but wanting to be challenged by that. And then also I think I'm like have just that competitiveness where it's like, oh, I want to like put my work up with other people's and it stand out. And I don't want it to look like somebody else's. And from there, just trying to be like, what is not expected yet. So I'm glad that that's coming through though. Cause yeah, for me to like, yeah, I really look up to those people. So I'm glad somebody feels that way about what I'm doing.
So that pivotal moment when you have really started to recognize your aesthetic and you've got that point of view, that elusive point of view that all of the photo editors tell you about when they're critiquing your work, and you come across it and you start honing it, or that moment right when you've come across it and you realize, okay, this is the look that I'm going for, or this is the look that I feel like is going to tell the story that I want it to tell and to give the feelings that I want to give it, or that I want it to give. I guess, how did you really come across it? Because I feel like as creatives and as people, when they first start doing photography, they kind of muddle around in the dark and they shoot the things like you said that you shot, like, oh, we're in a field. It's beautiful backlighting. And it's funny. I actually came across some of your older work on your Flickr page.
I didn't even know I had a Flickr page.
Yeah. Well, somebody put together an album of your work or something, but it's so, but to see that and then to see where you're at now is like night, like that's not even the same, you know, person anymore. But I think anybody can find comfort in that because it's like you got to start somewhere. But once you get into that mode of finding out really what that point of view is, then you're really cooking. You're cooking with grease. And so I guess the question, going back to the question, is like, how long did it take to find that vein? And what were some of the things that you were doing to really land where you landed with that? And I know it's a lot of trial and error, but do you have any, I don't know, any nuggets or knowledge to share in that vein?
Yeah. So something, yeah, kind of a multi-part thing. I feel like maybe in the like last year and a half, I think it, even just kind of getting down to being like, oh, there's a particular framing. I'm like, oh, kind of like a full body, like, first, I remember somebody, I was just like back home in Michigan and someone just kind of, they're like, oh, your phone, they're like, you do have this consistent thing. It's just like people in the middle of the picture. Like, and I was like, oh, okay. That's my, like, the people in the middle of the frame, which, you know, I don't, probably not, you know, there's exceptions to that, I guess, but being like, oh, there's a particular framing and like height from the ground that I like, we'll put the camera. And I think it just is, you know, becomes intuitive. Or I'm just like, oh yeah, that's where I like it. Or like, really experimenting with a lot of different lighting styles and being like going crazy. And I'm like, oh, I got five lights up and that must be, I'm really good. And then, but then being like, oh, you can just do it with one and it's like just more natural. And, but it's weird. Cause I still feel like every 6 months I'll be like, I don't like anything I've done anymore. And I need to move forward or else I'm like, you know, I'm just treading water. So damn, it's hard to say. Yeah. A lot of trial and error. And then I almost would think that it's at a certain point, there's almost maybe a laziness to it where I'm not like trying a thousand things. And I'm like, oh, let me like, I know I have like my six setups that I'll do. And like, now I can put different ideas into it, but knowing that whatever somebody brings me, I'm like, oh, I can put that into my, like, my sitting by the window thing it's, oh, now I really know that I don't want the shadow to hit the backdrop. So what do I do? Just really small, making small rules to myself and being like, don't break these rules unless, you know, obviously, you know, you're breaking them.
Well, you mentioned you felt like that was lazy, but honestly, I feel like that is like a part of the process. Like, for instance, who was it? I think it was Anthony Hopkins, who he reads his scripts like 1,000 times or something like that, to the point where he's got it memorized. So then when he's on set, he's able to, you know, be in the moment and actually do some other creative thing. So it kind of makes me think about that, where, you know, you've got your go-to setups that allow you to not have to think about that anymore. And now you can focus on that interaction with you and the subject, or even kind of weaving in some other elements. So I think that is like exactly the type of answer that I was looking for, that hopefully listeners can kind of engage with and take with them when they're out there trying to figure out what their style is. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I think, and then even to speak on it more, would also be like kind of finding how I work with the people a little bit. Like, it feels like now the things I'm saying, I'm like, oh, this is what I say. Yeah. For me personally, it's like, don't model. This is feeling posy. Like, just be like, you're waiting for me to like set something. Like, I liked how you looked when I was messing with the light. Just go back to that. Look, you can look bored. That's fine. I would rather have that than like it being like too vogue or like performative, like trying to get people feeling like, I feel like for a long time, it's just like, look at the camera, neutral, don't put anything on it. Just look at, don't do anything. And I think that helps with a lot of people who are like not comfortable doing it. So they're just like, just stand, like you're there. Like, the person is the important thing with, I think what I'm trying to do, it's the human, you're the interesting thing. Like the lights, like I don't need to do, I can do less with the lights. I can do less with everything else, allow them to be kind of themselves. And then also getting more comfortable and being like, being able to chat and then sneak the photos into that, like, which is kind of its own skill. Cause it's, oh, sometimes people talking like it doesn't work, but if you like can hit it at the right moment, right before they talk or right at that, becoming a little more easy to pull off. And then shooting on film, cause I'm not shooting 1,000 photos. Like, you know, we're getting like 12 photos to keep the budget down and dialing in there. And then I think shooting on film is really also helpful with that, because it's like, oh, I really have to know what I'm gonna shoot because I can't afford to find it.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the fact that you do shoot with film, because like when I like I said earlier, when I was looking at your work the first time I came across it, I'm like, man, that's got to be film, because it just feels, I mean, there's a lot that you can do in Photoshop, but I'm like, that just has a feeling to it that I don't feel like you can get with digital. And then I came across the process that you use where, and it's actually, because I shoot all digital, I don't shoot film. I've been thinking about it for years, but after I saw what you do, one, it makes me want to come to LA and train under you so I can figure out my own way to kind of do it in a similar way. Because I think the thing that was kind of not annoying, but the thing that was hindering me from not wanting to shoot film was, you know, having to send it off and get the scans and do all of this and all of that. And then what you do, like, you basically, you process the film yourself and you scan it yourself, and then you're able to, you've got this amazing setup from what I can tell.
Oh, yeah, that allows black you to, and white. Yeah, I can develop my own black and white, but color, I go to that one photo lab in Glendale.
Yeah.
Shout out to them. Great people. And yeah, I'm definitely a process person, and that's why I'll ask myself, why is the film important? People get mad at me for the results because it's like, I wish I had more. And I'm like, well, that's all we took. Like, or like, can we just shoot some digital? And I'm like, okay, but like, maybe don't tag me in it, because it's not the look. It's not my, if I'm going to, like, at a certain point, I was just, it's like, all right, I'm going to take myself like maybe a little serious here and be like, you can't tag me in that or something. Cause down, you know, the people that I'm looking at their work, they're like, their B-sides aren't being shown. Like they have a ton of photos they've taken that nobody will see with good reason. But yeah, I'm a very much a process-based person. So yeah, the developing, like in just in the kitchen with the cans is very therapeutic to me. The scanning takes a long time, but I really look forward to it because it just takes up hours that, and they're like, I can just, it's kind of meditative. And there's something about the fact that I took it on film, like I got the settings right. There's not a lot of wiggle room to fix it later. To me, it feels like it's like a swish compared to like a shot bouncing off the backboard.
You know? Oh, I like that analogy. Yeah, like, I like that analogy.
Like,
nothing but net, baby.
Yeah, if you can do it on film, it's like, then you can do it. But I'll use it. I mean, I have a digital camera on set and I'll shoot on that and be like, okay, that's what I get all my lights right in the right place. And
oh, so you'll use it like a Polaroid, like how they used to use
it's
Polaroid
just a Polaroid back. Yeah, it's just a proof, yeah. And then usually I will just kind of clear the card at the end of the shoot, unless I know that I should not do that. But I don't even want to take these into the computer. Like, I do not find like picking which preset to put on the thing, because then I'm like, oh, I could pick 1,000 of these and they all are correct. Like, they all work, but I don't know.
So you've really got me, again, when I saw the way that you did things, I'm like, you know, I would be totally cool with learning that technique and then not necessarily in the beginning taking it to like my editorial and my commercial clients, but really just like playing with it for myself, because I am envious of those who grew up in the age prior to digital where it was like film was all you had. So, you know, you're working in the dark room and you're doing these things. And like you said, it's the process. And I realize for me, that is something that has been missing, being able to really put my hands on the thing. And I like how you describe that it's therapeutic for you when you're going through that process. And I'm like, man, that sounds so appealing. And I feel like I'm going to start looking at some film cameras and trying to figure this thing out.
Yeah. Black and white is pretty easy to do at home. Once you get kind of into the swing of it, you just like, it's, you can't really mess it up. I'd say give that a shot. That's like a lot of fun.
Good place to start, black and white.
Yeah. Well, just cause I think with color, it just takes more gear and chemical, like you have to keep chemicals hot while you're doing it. And that just takes the three. It's just a lot more complicated. And I just go have somebody else do that. And yeah, doing the scanning and kind of editing and myself is super time consuming, but yeah, you do get your hand on every part of it. And I think you kind of learn all how that little ways you can change that and make it work to do different things. And you're like, oh, there's like potential to have that like organic effect that you want, pushing film, pulling film, even just, oh, like the other day is like, I'll just put two negatives on in the scanner and like have them overlap like that. It's just like
experimental
point of view. Yeah. And whether you show anybody or not, like I often don't, it's satisfying, because I think you have to, like, especially with your work, if you're wanting to take it far, find those ways to be like, this is for me. It's fun. Yeah. I recommend it because it's time consuming, but then yeah, it feels very like you're so present because yeah, you're just working with your hands and you got to get the timings right and it's the chemical smell and stuff. And you know, you're just like, oh yeah, I'm like doing it. I feel like I'm here. Like, and you got your drink there and you're just like, oh yeah, I'm like doing it.
That's what's up. You know, last year, 2020 was crazy. It was ridiculous with everything going on with the pandemic and the shutdowns. How did you find yourself like coping with that creatively? Was there any things that you did with that time off with your work, or did you take a complete step back and just say, you know what, I'm just gonna live in these emotions right now and try to figure it out with everybody else?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of putting the cameras down and just being like, I like packed up, you know, I have like a studio, basically my living room is my studio. There's just nothing in it but a backdrop. And it was like, oh, this is just going to be an empty room now. And, you know, I'll do some stretching in here or something. Like, but there was a part of it that was really nice to be like, oh yeah, there's no one expecting, like I got no, I was on unemployment. So it was just like, there's no expectation of what I'm going to do. And I have been coming from a place of like compulsively having to shoot, and you know, if like a few days had gone by and I wasn't doing anything, it's just I'm just like on Instagram being like, hey, can you shoot, and then not being able to do that at all, I was like, oh yeah, what else do I like? That gave me an opportunity just to focus on things in my life that, you know, needed maybe some focus. And that, and during it though, I did do a couple like FaceTime shoots, which I think pretty early on I people like started kind of doing that with a lot of kind of like, in my eyes, like kind of cringy results. It just seemed like people were kind of taking a weird approach to it. Just basically trying to use the webcam as the camera and not really, and just trying to take pretty portraits. And it's like, don't. like there's no idea to that. But then I kind of was like, oh, I remember talking to a friend and I was like, I want to try this thing where like, I'll take a photo of the phone. You'll see the whole phone. Maybe I'll put flowers around it or something, you know, make it a little set. And I don't know, like I got an idea for this. And like, the friend was like, that's stupid. And like, you should not do that. Like that's super cringe. And I was like, no, like, and then I saw some people doing it online. I was like, oh, they're not doing it like how I thought about it. And that is like, sorry to anybody who did.
No shade.
But I think, yeah, honestly, I don't, I was like, no, I should try to do this. And so like, I hit up some people who were like, who I hadn't had a chance to work with, but it was like, oh, look, can we try this idea? I kind of want, and I want to use like Helmut Newton inspired visuals and kind of bus through a phone, but you're surrounded by a border of a phone. And so I tried that and was happy with it. And I thought it was honestly going to like pop. I think people enjoyed them, but I was like, oh, some publication would want to run with this. But it didn't happen. But that was a fun, like I maybe did five of those throughout quarantine. And then I think pretty quickly was like, I think I said like what I needed to say. I'm just going to start wheeling back around and doing the same ideas. So I think I'm done with this. But that was fun. And tried to find a home for them, but they never really went anywhere. But to say like, I think quarantine was starting to lighten up and people just started feeling a little more comfortable, you know, just one-on-one, it's pretty low key. Starting it up again, it was really nice to have taken basically a year off and being like, oh, I broke the routine. What do I want to bring in with me now that I was maybe like doing before, but not really questioning it, like using less lights and like, or using more, starting to use more natural light or going other places. And it felt, I was like, oh, and almost like in that way that I think I was saying all of my work was all over the place. I think a critique I had gotten was like, nope, people maybe aren't hiring you because they don't know who they're going to get. It's either going to be this like crazy obscure thing or this, or it'll be a clean portrait or it'll be a landscape with a face in it. And it just wasn't cohesive. But I think coming back to it, it was, oh, yeah, what do I want to do? So it felt fresh to me. And I was like, wow, without doing anything, I feel like a better photographer for not having done it for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, it feels like a new breath. But also there was a period when I was starting back up again, I was like, I think I did one and I really didn't feel like good about the shoot. And I was like, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. This is so much work. And I'm like setting up, I remember like breaking down the backdrop and being, well, I was like, I don't want to stop breaking down this backdrop, this whole pro, like, and I think I was just maybe in a weird headspace or something, but I remember having, yeah, some moments of that. But at this point, I just feel like it's too late to stop. Now I kind of like just keep seeing this through. And that's my motivating thing, is that it's just too late to stop now.
No, I totally get it, man. You're all in now. It's too far. Like, so you turn back, right?
Yeah. Unless you see me going to like trade school all of a sudden. But all to say, quarantine was great because it was like my money was taken care of and it was like, oh, wow, I would love to work from a position of my work doesn't have to make me the money. And you can kind of perform from a place of, which is what do I want to do? So now that that's ending, I'm kind of like, okay, like I can keep that energy, but hopefully that the jobs start coming in more so.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you hit on a key point with that whole, okay, doing nothing and coming back and being better. It really speaks to how important rest really is for everybody, not just creatives, but especially us, because, you know, if we do want to keep things fresh and innovative, we need to take breaks. And I have not been taking breaks. And I feel like during the pandemic, it forced me to stop. But I was still like, I wasn't accepting the fact that I had to stop. And I was kind of like whiny. And, you know, I would try to, I think I had played around with some self-portraits during the first like month or two. And I'm like, I don't like shooting myself. Like, I'm not a good muse. Like, I need something. And that's part of the reason why I started the podcast is because just like you talked about how you like really like connecting with people and, mm-hmm. And going deeper, like this gave me a reason to do it and learn about somebody and kind of take my mind off my own woes and kind of just hear about other people's processes and learn about their history. And so it's been very therapeutic for me in that regard. But throughout the pandemic, what was it? Okay, so March, maybe April is when we kind of shut everything down. But by May, people were like calling me again and bringing me in for jobs. And, you know, I was doing them and we were COVID compliant, of course. But I wasn't able to really take the break that I really needed. Mm. And so what I've decided to do for the month of August is I'm not shooting at all. Like I'm not. Well, OK. Let me not say at all, because my wife and I are going to take a little vacation. I'll probably bring my little Fujifilm situation, but I'm not taking any commercial or editorial clients or even private clients. I need to not create, because I feel like I've been in a place recently where I'm like, I don't want to share my work. Like, I don't even think I've posted like a real post on Instagram since like April, because mm-hmm. I'm like, there's a change coming, but I haven't identified what that looks like, which is one of the reasons why I've been even thinking about like this film thing. Like how can I merge some of the themes that have been kind of going on in my mind, but merge it with, you know, the technical in a way that really complements the story and drives home something that's more than just a pretty picture. So that's where I am right now. And I feel like the month of August, it's going to be my time to really, you know, self-evaluate and figure that stuff out.
Yeah, I definitely go through those same growing pain moments where I feel, it's like every like 3 to 6 months, I'm just, I don't know how I got to where I am. And you feel, you're like, this is cool. Like eventually I was like, oh no, this is a good feeling. A change is going to come. I'm going to punch through the wall. And oh, now I can like, now I see it. I see the thing. I can't describe it, but I see where that feeling and energy is going. So I feel like for you, like even just the change of like moving to a film thing, it could just be a small enough of a degree where you're like, this is very personal to me. And I'm excited, like whatever gets you excited about going back into it. Like recently I bought a point and shoot, because I was just like, I was like, I just want something I can run around and do. But I got a medium, it was like a medium format point and shoot. So I was excited about that. But I was like, I can't really afford this. But I was like, I guess this at the end of the day will make me feel excited. And that will get me outside and like with somebody and like create something. And hopefully, you know, a job will come down the line from it and it'll pay for itself.
I love it. I love it.
But yeah, I think just the breaks. Breaks are good. And yeah, just finding what's exciting to you. I think get into that artist way thing, because it does really just do a lot of connecting to the inner child and being like, what do you want to do? Like you can take the reins for a little bit.
Good stuff. I love that. I love that. Well, Nick, man, I feel like you have definitely shared quite a bit of your story. You've filled us in on even the technicals of it. I love learning about how you are utilizing the technology that you have to enjoy the process, but also create imagery that is striking, that is timeless in a lot of ways, because that was something else that stood out to me when I was looking at your work is, man, like this, there is a lot of timeless stuff that you can go back years from now and be like, yo, this is still a relevant photo. And so thank you for sharing just a bit about why that even is and how you create.
I appreciate that.
All right, that was my chat with Nick. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. And like I said at the beginning of the episode, he really inspired me to pull the trigger on something that I've been thinking about for quite some time, and that is to start experimenting with shooting with film. And so I did end up purchasing a Mamiya RB67 Pro SD, which is a medium format film camera from like the 90s. And yes, it's a bit of an older, bigger camera, but so far from the times that I've used it, it really has slowed me down and caused me to be more intentional about the things that I'm shooting and how I'm composing and lighting the shot. And that's always been something that I've had to struggle with, the need to always be rushing through things is
constantly like on my back when I'm shooting. So it's definitely a change of pace shooting film, and I'm looking forward to experimenting with it even more. So more to come on that. And thanks to Nick for really pushing me over the edge and causing me to pull the trigger on that. Something else that he actually mentioned that I decided to get into was the artist's way. And I've had a couple of guests mention it in the past. And, you know, again, after kind of hearing him talk about it a bit more, I decided that was also something else that I wanted to start doing. So that has also been an eye-opening experience. And I'm really only in the first week of this 12-week program that the book actually puts you through. So if you're a creative and you're looking at ways to really break through and try some different things and, you know, even look at some of the blockages that you might have as a creative, check that book out. I'll put a link to it in the show notes as well. Speaking of show notes, definitely take a look at that for any of the links and resources that were mentioned in this episode. As always, if you enjoyed this conversation, please feel free to share it with your friends and anybody else that you think might find value in the conversation and the topics discussed. Feel free to also rate and like wherever you listen to your podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at What Makes You Click Podcast. And I think that covers it. So until next time.